Good morning, everyone. I'm going to read another poem from Ilbam. The yellow leaves of a thousand trees fill the empty ground. Leaves are very good for writing a living Zen poem. On the endless leaves are an endless poem. Doubling, doubling, there is no end to Ilbang's poem. So I think Monday is the full moon of fall, the beginning of fall. And the equinox comes, I think, next week. So in celebration of fall and leaves, I want to share that poem. So the Heart Sutra, we repeat it every week. As our minds change, the Heart Sutra changes. Something will jump out at us a little bit differently than the last time we looked at it. So I'm going to propose that everything is a projection of your mind. Shariputra, all dharmas have the character of emptiness. They have no beginning and no end. They are not pure, neither are they impure. They do not increase, neither do they decrease. In emptiness, there is no form, no feelings, no perceptions, no impulses, no knowledge. There's no way to wake up to seeing your projections if you don't have projections. Our life is full of projections. Stop denying it. Stop saying what you see is real. Start seeing what you see as your projection of your own mind, from your own view, from how you see the world. So many stories in Zen about enlightenment happening by the falling of a cherry blossom or the sound of a stick hitting a bamboo or a shout or a Zen master's greeting across a river. Why? What is that enlightenment? It's no other than waking up to the projection of our own mind. Because in that moment, you have a choice you didn't know you had, and you have an insight, and wisdom comes about from a place that you didn't know it existed beyond your projections. So do we stop projecting? Probably not. I haven't. There's a reason that Buddha's teachings start out with life is suffering. You can pretend it's not so, but the day comes, you have your last breath. So don't deny it. Don't attempt to make it into something other than what it is. Life is short. So in this moment, we want to be awake so that we can really be alive. Mirages after mirages. Misunderstanding after misunderstanding. Misunderstandings are wonderful when you recognize them as such. So you say something and somebody misunderstands you. Great example is voice to text. Right? You don't look the text over very carefully. You just click send. Next thing you know, you have an embarrassing moment, or in the worst case scenario, somebody really angry at you for saying something that you didn't even say. So all this self-made suffering that we go through, how much of it comes from misunderstanding? and holding on to our view. You know, this egotistical place that we consider me, I, me, mine. It's all a false notion. When we have those moments where a projection comes into our mind as we're sitting and we see it. Oh, yes. There it is again, Will. That fantasy of yours. There it goes. And the light streams in through the window. Koans. Koans are designed to have you recognize the projections of your own mind. When a Zen master asks you to solve a koan, he's just asking you to be real. Just be real in this moment. He's not asking you to be some special, mystical, enlightened being that is beyond this experience of suffering that we have in life. He's just saying, hey, be real. Who are you fooling? Stop fooling around. Get real.
I liked what you were saying about the, you know, the being present. Oh, it resonates with me as a mom, because sometimes, you know, I'm so busy and I'm distracted, and then my kids are just, mom, we just want you. Like, we don't need this super mom who bakes cookies after school and does all this stuff. We just want you to play Mario with us for like an hour, you know? So
yeah,
sometimes it's that, I guess I could play Mario and not try to do all the things all the time and just be right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's very good. And it reminds me of when I first started doing these Dharma talks and all. I used to feel like I had to prepare. I had to like really get it together and do a lot of reading and come up with things to say. And then at some point I realized I was just, that was all make-believe. I just had to get real. Just be who I am in this moment. Be real. That's what Zen is. So if you're going to talk about Zen, come from a place that's real. It took me a while to figure that out. And I still fall into it. You know, am I saying the right thing? Am I presenting it right? All of that. But that's okay. That's all part of it. Nothing wrong with it. It's just, yeah.
That's how we all learn.
Yeah, we're all learning. Thank you. That's right.
Going back to the poem, I'm not sure I heard it exactly the way you said it, but what came to mind to me was the fact that the leaves are constantly falling. And so what I see may be a snapshot of what's occurring, but it's not the whole picture. It's constantly changing. It's in process. And so how that affects me is that I have to be able to constantly change in the way I see things. And as far as my projections, I think I have a choice to a certain extent in what I'm projecting. Yeah. And I often go down a negative path, but I don't have to do that, or I can correct that. For instance, how can I be a bodhisattva in this situation? Or what allows me to make a contribution, to be compassionate, to be helpful, you know, which is usually being able to see a bigger picture than just me. You know, I think I get into a negative space when everything's about me. Sure. And obviously everything is not about me. So that's where the practice has helped me quite a bit, because it gives me a better perspective on how my mind works.
Yes, we have a choice in what we do with our projections. And also, I talked, I think it was last week, about the signposts, you know, the 10 ox herding pictures, and how they're signposts of the different so-called stages along the way. And also, the precepts. The precepts have been compared to commandments. Yeah, but they're not. They're not commandments. They're different in the sense that they're signposts, ways to be able to correct our deluded view about ourselves and our world so that we can be better human beings in how we do the world. And the five precepts that most Buddhists take when they first become Buddhists, you know, not stealing, not lying, no intoxication. You know, when you look at those, by following these precepts, you're more likely to go down a path that's going to lead to less suffering. I think that's why they're there, because it's a given that we're going to project. And it's also a given that we have history and we have karma. And so we have habitual directions that we take things in our mind. So to correct that, we can use things like the precepts, the perfections, these notions that are given to us to help us to see when we're going in a direction that is probably harmful to ourselves or to someone else and unnecessary. Yeah, we have tools. There's tools, that's all I'm saying.
So you missed a nice time on the beach yesterday.
I did miss a nice time at the beach yesterday. Yeah, she and I talked about it just briefly. She asked me, did I go to the beach? No. Speaking of projections, I was projecting rain. I was wrong.
You know, this week I had, for the first time in a year, I had another bout of insomnia that came in. And, you know, I had a night of bad sleep, woke up, just my mind was busy. And then I had a second night of bad sleep. And then, you know, you're tired and your mind starts messing with you. And then you lose confidence in your ability to sleep. And it was like this kind of, almost like a demon, like descending upon me of like, my mind just, and I wasn't necessarily worried about anything in particular. It was just busy. And then I've kind of ridden this out before. I know how it is. And I know that I'm lucky enough with my insomnia where like it goes away. I get a night of good sleep and then it builds up my confidence. It comes back. And it's like, now I'm sleeping 9 hours a night and waking up and I'm just like, oh, I'm awake. Time to close my eyes and go right back to bed. And it's just amazing. The difference of my mindset from one week to the next week, where one night it was super busy. I was just completely overcome by this sense of fear and dread. And then it's completely gone and I'm completely at peace now. And it's literally a difference of 4 or 5 days. And it's just amazing. It's like how my mind completely can flip either way.
Yes.
I know obviously being tired affects being very underslept. Affects your mind, but it's like I'm completely two separate people in 1 week. It's very weird but fascinating.
It's just like the weather.
Yeah.
And when you're patient, sun comes out again.
I feel your pain, Michael. I've been since having COVID dealing with insomnia, which they said is sometimes like a long-term effect of it. My doctors told me that. So I feel your pain because I've had insomnia for like a month now.
Wow.
It is not fun.
No, it's not fun.
I like
it. Really, it really colors everything, doesn't it?
I baked brownies at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know what I find? I find that if you sit with the expectation of relieving the pressure of not sleeping, you're kind of doomed. You literally, and it's really kind of what we learned here. It's, you literally have to sit down, observe your situation, be going and go, oh, isn't this interesting?
Correct.
And you have to be like, and I'm experiencing the tiredness. I'm experiencing the fear of not sleeping. I'm experiencing it. Because if I go there and I go like, all right, I'm not sleeping, I'm anxious, this has got to stop. It's kind of doesn't work. It's just a different way of looking at it. It's hard though. Because 3 in the morning, you know, you got to be up in 3 hours and you're anxious and tired and you feel like I need to fix this now. And if you try to fix it now, it's a fool's errand.
Well, you know, traditionally, you know, Zen monastery, there's very little sleeping going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly meditating.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going into deep states where the body is very calm. The mind is very calm. So maybe they're even reaching areas that normally you might reach in sleep. But so if you can get to a very, very calm place in sitting, by letting go of all that you just, the way you described it, by not attaching to, I gotta sleep, just letting it go, not even worrying about what happens next, just being present to sitting, it works. But if you're, like you said, if there's any sort of anxiety that you're holding on to about whatever's next, you might as well not even sit down, because that's not meditating.
Right.
I'm lucky if I get 6 hours broken up into 2-3 hour mm-hmm. chunks with my 4-year-old, who likes to wake up in the middle of the night to tell me he had a dream, or he's tired, or his bed is itchy, or
Well, that's the other thing about projection. There is no time or space in mind. Where is the mind? When we measure, what are we doing? We're projecting.
Yeah.
We're measuring how much sleep we have. There's no measuring in meditation. It's the still point. There's the space-time continuum idea. You know, there's no separation. There's just mind. From my imagination, I go to, well, what does that mean in terms of our idea of time and space and distance? And is mind really in time and space and distance? And does it really have birth and death? Or is this just more projection from the point of view of having a body and senses? From the point of view of mind, one mind? You know, in Zen, we talk about one. There's not two. Koans and Zen practice is always coming from the one, not two. Two is projection. You know, the three pillars of Zen, right? Great faith, great courage, and great doubt.
I don't think I've ever heard that before, honestly. I know about the three voices. I don't think I've ever heard the three pillars, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that doubt's one of them.
Oh, very much so. Great question is another way to say it.
Buddha said, don't ever believe anybody, even with your teacher. He has all the questions.
Yeah.
I'm reading a biography of Leonard Cohen, and I'm reading about how right now he's in the 90s and he's going to spend time at Mount Baldy in a monastery.
Yeah.
And he talks about the idea of studying Zen. And he said this one thing, he goes, everyone who studies Zen is a hurt person.
Is what?
Is a hurt person. And I was kind of interested in that concept. What you thought about that. I mean, he said, and he basically said it very openly, like kind of like very, it was just basically a statement, and he didn't expand upon it. And I was wondering the thought behind that.
That's understanding the nature of reality. Life is suffering. Plain and simple. Buddha's first teaching, it's right there. That's what he's saying. But see, he's not running away from it. Zen is not running away from it. Ordinary life is running away from it by buying more, having more, you know, chasing after this and chasing after that.
Road less traveled, first sentence. Life is difficult.
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing. I really enjoy our sessions together. Sitting together is wonderful. It's nice that some of us are showing up here every week at the Zendo. I I really enjoy sitting with you. Anything else before we close up shop?
We still on track to do the session October.
Yes, October 2nd. I just posted it again, and I will send out another reminder that October 2nd, we are going to have a retreat. All right. Thank you.